This program uses metric units for the most part. In this episode, I mention metric fucktons. For the metric impaired, a metric fuckton is 1,000 fuckkilos or 1 million fuckgrams. That's approximately 2,204 fuckpounds and 10 fuckounces, or, less precisely, about 1.1 imperial short fucktons. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 139 of Little Brother, for the 25th of November, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! Manifest V3 is a collection of changes that Google have assembled for the Chrome web browser and possibly other Chromium-related browsers. Initially announced in 2018, it is set to take effect next year with the release of Chrome version 127. Probably most impactful of the changes will be that ad blocking technology will be disabled. The thing to keep in mind here is that Google is an advertising company, and so this is not really unexpected. For those of us who attempt to maintain, to the greatest degree possible, an advertising-free life, notice the lack of ads in this podcast, for instance, this problem is easily enough solved by not using the Chrome browser. It is not clear whether or not other Chromium-based browsers will be impacted. Apple have announced last week that they are going to be adding support for the RCS messaging standard to the iPhone. Up to this point in time, this has been one of the incompatibilities between the Apple and Android ecospheres, as Android phones use RCS in their default messaging app, and iPhone uses iMessage-specific proprietary protocols. When an iPhone and an Android need to communicate, they have to fall back to the old SMS protocol, an old 2G protocol which does not support rich text or any form of encryption. With the inclusion of RCS in iOS, unfettered communication between the platforms becomes possible. Tetra is a specification for two-way radio systems that has been available in Europe since the mid-90s. The system is digital, trunked, and encrypted. The standards body behind it, the European Telecommunications Standards Institute, or ETSI, have been up to this point steadfast in their view that the standard should be closed, limiting competition in the market to those manufacturers with whom ETSI has deigned to make the standard available. Well, back in July of this year, Dutch cybersecurity firm Midnight Blue were able to crack the encryption on Tetra, making it no longer secure. In response to this, ETSI have done an about-face. They have done the right thing. The specification for Tetra is to be made public in the near future, allowing, per ETSI press release, quote, for any flaws to be uncovered and mitigated before widespread deployment occurs, end quote. Clearly, ETSI have come to understand the open source premise. Yeah. Finally, a thread on X, or formerly known as Twitter, purports to demonstrate a new use for ChatGPT. Given an image of one of the redacted documents that the government has made available recently concerning unexplained aerial phenomena, better known to the general public as UFOs, the chatbot made an attempt to reconstruct the missing text. There is, of course, no way to know for sure that the reconstructed text is correct. However, if nothing else, it can at least make reading redacted documents easier. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time? We've got three stories for you today. First up is the Kivu Security Tracker. It is a map of atrocities in eastern Congo that, according to an article in The Intercept, has been used by policymakers, journalists, and academics for research purposes. It is operated by Human Rights Watch and New York University, and it's been taken offline because of lax security protocols which have led to the exposure of the identities of roughly 8,000 vulnerable people who have reasonable fear of retribution or continued atrocity. As of this morning, I have confirmed that the site remains offline. Next up, the Clop ransomware group claimed to have harvested 1.8 terabytes of data from the New York City Bar Association, a voluntary organization of lawyers. The attack was nearly a year ago, but it comes to light now because of filings with regulators in the states of Maine and Vermont revealing that 27,000 members of the association may have been impacted. However, speaking of regulators, this next one is priceless. The Alf V ransomware group, also known as Black Cat, tried an interesting new tactic. Alf V breached a company called MeridianLink, which is a provider of a loan origination and digital lending platform. And then, get this, they put a filing in with the Securities and Exchange Commission on behalf of MeridianLink, reporting the very breach that they had just performed. Now, as I understand it, there is pending legislation to require that corporations make such a report in a timely fashion, but that it doesn't take effect for a few more weeks. The SEC have, however, built the infrastructure to support it when it becomes effective, and apparently it is live. So yeah, that happened. Over the past fortnight, a few security alerts have accumulated, so let's hit them real quick here. First up, we have a vulnerability known as Reptar. It's being tracked as CVE-2023-23583, which scores a CVSS of 8.8. This one can be exploited by crafting a sequence of processor opcodes in a VM running on certain Intel processors to get escalated privileges on the VM host. If you are managing a virtual environment, this is what might be called a very bad thing. That said, Intel have released fixes in the form of a processor microcode update, so If you are running VMs on Intel processors, patch your systems. For our second one, researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the University of California, San Diego have discovered that it is possible to extract RSA keys from failed SSH connection attempts, all through passive listening to the network. They've published a paper on the topic, unassumingly titled Passive SSH Key Compromise via Lattices. The authors are Ryan Sullivan, He and Hennigan. He is H-E, if you want to try to look it up. Anyway, the researchers do recommend some countermeasures, which are mostly pointed at implementers of SSH clients and servers. The most important one is that the software should check signatures before sending them. Interestingly enough, OpenSSH, which is commonly used on Linux and often used on other Unixes, does not exhibit this vulnerability. The third alert comes from a pattern that Akamai have discovered in two brands of routers, WAP switches, and video recorders, a vulnerability that allows remote code execution being used to implement a botnet. They have not revealed the two companies' names, however. They have contacted both of them, and one has committed to a patch. If I become aware of it, I will make you aware of it. The weekend before Thanksgiving this year has been a real whirlwind in the world of artificial intelligence. No, there was no new development in the field, just a metric fuckton of drama at one AI company, which, of course, was none other than OpenAI. So, what happened? Why don't we ask GPT-4? Let's ask it. You are now the CEO of OpenAI. What has happened in the last 2 weeks? Oh. It says it doesn't know anything about it since it was trained in April of this year and doesn't have any more recent information. All right, then. We'll just have to do this the old-fashioned way. So, the drama began on the 17th when the board of directors of OpenAI decided to fire the CEO, Sam Altman. Immediately following, the president of the company, Greg Brockman, tweeted, quote, "Based on today's news, I quit," end quote. Over the course of the weekend, Microsoft offered to hire both of them, and they offered to get people in the door who wanted it. 738 members of the OpenAI staff, and to be clear, this is a company of 770. 738 members of the OpenAI staff signed on to an open letter making it clear that they intended to quit if the board didn't reinstate the two leaders and then resign. Can I just say, this is an amazing degree of loyalty to a company's leadership. That is super rare. This sort of thing can only happen when the employees truly believe in their leaders, that they would follow them into battle, so to speak. This is the sort of following that most executives can only dream of because, to be blunt, many, if not most, are objectively awful people. Anyway, by the end of the weekend, OpenAI were in talks with Altman to return to his position as CEO. So why did this happen? Well, the problem seems to be centered around a project called QStar. This project's existence is not confirmed, so don't take this as holy or legal writ. But the understanding I have is that they were working on artificial general intelligence. Let me explain that. The types of artificial intelligence that we've been dealing with in the past few years are all what are called large language models. They're great at finding writings relevant to a topic or question that you might pose. They can parse your question with reasonable accuracy, but there are some things that they can't do. One of those things is reason. A large language model is dependent on the information that it was trained on being accurate. It's not able to discern truth from falsehood, and as I've mentioned before, it may frequently make things up that sound plausible but are false, a phenomenon that the researchers have dubbed hallucination. Artificial General Intelligence, or AGI, strives to give the AI the ability to process information logically, to perform math accurately, things that computers are alleged to be good at, but which AIs have not been very good at to date. That brings us back to the OpenAI boardroom. In essence, it seems that Altman, having been an actual AI researcher himself, had some legitimate concerns about keeping such a creation fenced in the hopes of not being the one who creates Skynet. It seems as though many of the company's employees, also being actual AI researchers by definition, share that concern. There is a concept in corporate circles of a thing called acceptable risk or risk appetite. It's an idea of how much risk the company is willing to accept in return for whatever profits they make. To be clear, it's a formalization of something that we do as human beings every day when we get behind the wheel, step out into public, board an airplane or train, etc. We have different ideas of what risk is acceptable, so do corporate boards. It seems, in this case, the majority of the board disagreed with the company's risk appetite. For what it's worth, Altman's risk appetite seems to be established as pretty low. He is a prepper and has spoken about the fact that he has a bug out location. I have to respect that. Something that slid under the radar for a lot of us, given what a busy fortnight it's been in the world of AI, was the meeting between the U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese Premier Xi Jinping. The talks covered a number of topics, with AI being amongst them. The primary focus of the AI portion of the discussion was on the ethical use of the technology. The two agreed that the use of technology in military or nuclear operations posed a significant risk. While there was no formal declaration of any specific agreement, the fact that this topic is on their minds is somewhat encouraging, as it shows that the leadership are taking it on rather than ignoring it. Despite this, I'm sure there are secret labs in both countries where research into this is going on. I personally find myself wondering if either of the leaders have seen the film Colossus, The Forbin Project. If any of you have not seen this film, take a couple hours and do so. You'll see that science fiction has already made its predictions on how nuclear-powered, nuclear-armed AI could turn out. And it's not pretty. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Health insurance in the UK is not something that you hear a whole lot about, but apparently it's a thing. Despite the presence of a national healthcare system, and just like any kind of insurance anywhere, they are data hungry. Simultaneous to this, there is an organization in the UK called the UK Biobank, which is an organization carrying out a long-term study of 500,000 British subjects, looking for correlations between genetic makeup, diet, lifestyle, and other things, and health outcomes. It should be a noble cause, in the interest of furthering science. I've often said that if people could be trusted to act in good faith, we'd live in a much better world. Unfortunately, we do not. As The Guardian and The Observer have both reported that the UK Biobank have opened up their databases a number of times to the health insurance industry between 2020 and 2023. The data were, according to The Guardian, quote, provided to insurance consultancy and tech firms for projects to create digital tools that help insurers predict a person's risk of getting a chronic disease, end quote. Congratulations to the UK Biobank. You have just set the furtherance of science back. Too many people already don't trust science, and now a new batch don't. And given this display of gross disregard for your volunteer subjects, why should they? Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Julie Bernstein, DOA, Michael Bronstein, Snackness, Psycho, Azrael, The Axe That Slayed Me, Thriller at Play, and Joe Cadillac for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 140 will drop on December 9th. Stay safe and be well. It is set to take effect next year with the release of Chrome version 27. 127. It may frequently make things up that sound plausible but are false. A phenomenon. We did the thing!